KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Frost Stillwell with you. Welcoming Ed Royce to the show. Congressman Ed Royce, Republican, California's 40th Congressional District. That includes Fullerton, Anaheim, Orange, Placentia. Congressman Royce, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Frost.
Thanks for being on today. Question, do you in Congress see and or care about the numbers that are overwhelmingly disapproving of the job that's being done there? 70% of people currently disapprove of the job Congress is doing, and I think the recent fiasco of getting the budget approved the last seconds are one of the reasons why. Do you guys get how upset the voting public is at what's going on in Washington?
I do a lot of town meetings, so I'm well aware that those numbers are probably about right. I think at least 70% of the people are very, very frustrated, and with a budget deficit at $1.6 trillion, they're right to be frustrated.
Well, I mean, obviously, when you have a two-party system like we do, you have to fall in line with Republicans and do what the party says. I don't think that's right, Ed. I know you have to because you got to get reelected. You've been there a long time. You've been there since 1993. But can you tell me, when this negotiation was going on, how many of you and your constituents, the people that you rub elbows with, had ideas that you couldn't really get forward because it wasn't in line with the party?
Well, I know what you're thinking and your argument there, but in point of fact, there are a lot of internal disagreements that we have inside our conference. I think the one issue that we all agreed on was that we couldn't go along with the president's idea of just having a spending freeze. We had to make some reductions here because in this appropriations bill, this is sort of lays the foundation for what we're going to do afterwards with the budget itself. And some of the issues that were tangential to this, the writers, for example, that you brought up, these issues that didn't go to the bottom line, they were in fact resolved between the Speaker and Harry Reid. John Boehner told us about a week out, hey, I've got those resolved. Now it's about the number and the question of whether we're going to ratchet this spending down or not. And on the question of spending, that's something that all the Republicans seem to agree on. I don't know any, you know, that don't think that if we have the president's budget, which for the next 10 years would add $9.5 trillion, that we can possibly sustain that. And on the other hand, I think most Republicans are going to agree we're going to have to go the other direction, make some tough choices on entitlement spending, and reduce those so that we do calm the markets and so that we begin to reduce that deficit back towards a balanced budget.
Now, Congressman Royce, the entitlements have been there for so long, you could argue that a lot of people expect them. They don't. The Democratic Party refuses to touch those. Obviously, they don't.
And I understand that, but here's the problem: they've gone from 32% of the budget to 64% of the entire budget, and they're headed to 74% of the entire budget in another, you know, the generation. And when you get to that magnitude, and you're running deficits this large, you're watching the interest on every year. The interest is about $200 billion. You're going to watch that in a couple of years go to $400 billion, and in 10 years it's going to go to a trillion. And that's if the interest rates don't go up. That's why this has to be tackled.
You know, I don't really know what to think about life here in America in 20, 30 years. I mean, it seems like perhaps we've had the best of times, because this money has to be paid back. We cannot possibly continue the standard of living we've enjoyed in recent years and recent decades because we charged all that. Is it possible, Congressman Royce, we just have to get used to a lower standard of living to, even as the president said, living within our means? Though that, I think it's going to mean tightening the belt a lot tighter than people even are suggesting today.
Well, of course, the situation is a lot tougher than it was in 95 and in 96. But I do know that in 96 we were able to work out an agreement at that time to get the deficit reduced and to put us onto a path towards a balanced budget. The question is now, with the entitlements as large as we are, as they are, can we do this again? I think we have to. I think we have to do it without shutting the government down. And I supported the effort when we passed bills over to Reid in the Senate that would prevent a shutdown, and I'm glad to see that we got through this without a shutdown. And I think we've got to get through the budget agreement without that. What gives me some encouragement is there's 32 Democrats and 32 Republicans in the Senate that just wrote a letter about a week ago to the president saying, we've got to take on entitlements. It is going to be very difficult, but we've got to look at what the president's commission has come up with here, the Deficit Reduction Commission. These are the magnitudes of the numbers we have to deal with. We may not agree with the specifics, but we've got to come to an accord. If we do all of that, I think we can turn this thing around. That's going to be hard to do, and people are going to have to get engaged in this and, understand.
How are we going to get the people, the voting population, that expects this to go along with it? Because 61% of Americans in a recent Gallup poll oppose cutting government spending for Medicare. At the same time, the Congressional Budget Office says the combined costs of Medicare and Medicaid is expected to double by the year 2021. So we have to get that under control, yet 6 out of 10 Americans are saying, hands off, don't touch it. So what politician's going to have the guts to stand up and touch it? That means it costs them their job. That's the catch-22.
And I think the way to explain it is that the programs are going to be insolvent. They're not going to be there in 20 years unless we reform them. And if we act now, we can ensure, you know, first of all, as you know, everyone over 55 in the plan that they're talking about in the House of Representatives are going to be in the current system. For younger individuals, they're going to make changes to ensure that the system is around for future generations. But, you know, those with means are going to have to pay more into the system, and you're going to have to adjust it in a way that is more economically driven to reduce costs. And so that's basically the thought here. If we don't, I think you and I have seen the footage from Athens, Greece, what things look like once you're on the brink of insolvency. And you have the debt crisis, a bond crisis, and the interest rates go way up as they did in Greece. We've got to explain to people that if we don't tackle this now, it's going to begin to look like Greece.
I hope people understand how close we are to that, Ed, because this isn't just a concept from a really cool movie. This actually could happen in a handful of years. It could happen next year. It could be happening now if our credit goes down the hole.
Yeah, I think to back up what you're saying, the former chairman of the Federal Reserve says there is a 50-50 chance of a bond crisis in the next couple of years. And, of course, if you're borrowing 42 cents of every dollar the government's spending, you can see exactly why that would be the case. So, hence, you know, with debt at this epic level, this is why I think the population needs to get engaged, need to understand that this is the time to make the reforms, the entitlement reforms, to bring this back into balance. Nobody's going to get everything they want. Everybody's going to be a little disappointed in this. But at the end of the day, the parties have got to come together and do this. And I think by bringing this up on Wednesday in the House of Representatives on the floor, we'll pass out a long-term budget for the next 10 years. It'll be a blueprint that we send over to the Senate. And then my hope is the 32 Democrats and 32 Republicans over there that are working together on this and sent that letter to the president can get together and begin to make the tough compromises to get something onto the president.
Congressman, I know it's Sunday and it's your day off and it's getting late, but can you hang with me 5 more minutes?
Sure. Happy
All right. I have more to ask Ed Royce when we come back. Congressman from the 40th District here in California. Frost Stillwell, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Frost Stillwell and talking to Ed Royce, congressman from the 40th District here in the state. Ed, thank you for round two here. You mentioned the last break about as we tackle entitlements, that eventually the rich are going to have to pay more. You see, my problem with that is if you reduce my Social Security payment because I made a lot of money in my golden gravy years, you don't understand, I've spent that money. It doesn't mean I retire rich. I used to make a really, really good salary years ago when I had a full-time radio gig here in L.A. I spent all that money. That money's gone. I've bought some things and had some great meals, and I've had some good times in my past. But I don't have that money in the bank. So if you look at how much money I made in my career, it would make you think I'm a rich, wealthy multimillionaire. So if you reduce my benefits because I made a lot of money, that's not fair to me. When I retire, I may not have a dime in the bank.
And I think when we discuss Social Security, I think you and I are in concurrence on that. I think on the Social Security front, as opposed to the Medicare front, on the Social Security front, what we're talking about there is some of the recommendations that are being put forward that would slightly increase the retirement age for younger workers today, because we're living 20 years longer than we were when the system was set up.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And one of the other recommendations is slightly bringing the cap up in terms of the amount of wages that come in under Social Security. That's what the Democrats would like to do. So some kind of compromise, I think, is going to come out on Social Security that makes it not unlike what we've got today, very close to it.
Would that be enough to say with those two things, if you do in fact compromise the Democrats and raise the cap, so which is capped now at what, a little over $100,000 you stop paying in?
Let's
say you take it up to $150,000 or $175,000 or $200,000. Is that plus bumping the retirement age up 6 months or a year, is that enough to make it solvent?
I believe that, you see, Social Security is a lot closer to solvency than Medicare and Medicaid are. So if we make those types of adjustments to Social Security, we're quite close. On Medicare and Medicaid, we've got to get some more efficiencies into that system and block granting the Medicaid to the states and allowing the states to use a more efficient process than the cumbersome federal bureaucracy, at least from what we've seen so far, would save a lot on the Medicaid side.
Now, that's what Representative Paul Ryan, that's his plan, is to let the states do it. Blow up.
And remember, this isn't all we're talking about here. We're also talking about getting rid of the crop subsidies, going to a market-based system for agriculture. We're talking about, instead of seeing the agencies, the government agencies, expanding at 24% over the next 10 years, as we saw in the president's budget, we're talking about holding that flat. We're talking about not expanding the federal workforce to the extent that the administration wants to do, but flattening that out. So there are a lot of other parts of this budget that gets us to the $6 trillion over the next decade in savings. But I think we have to do it, and I think we've got to do it soon enough that the credit markets, we're at a point now where the credit rating agencies just continue to warn that we're on the verge of losing our AAA credit rating for U.S. Treasuries. We can't have that interest rate hike up during a recession just because we don't send the right message with the budget that we're going to get this under control.
Yeah, and the wrong message will be if the next big fight, which is coming up clearly, is about raising the debt limit. If that is unresolvable and goes down to the wire too, that's going to send a terrible message to the rest of the world.
And I think enough members know that we will reach an accord. But just like with these negotiations, in order to get to about $39 billion in reductions, they had to negotiate out all these different areas. I think what advantages us a little bit on the overall budget issue is the fact, as I said earlier, that you have 32 Democrats joining with 32 Republicans in the Senate saying it's time to strike a compromise on the long-term budget on entitlements. And so if we can start immediately on that process. I know that Tom Coburn out of Oklahoma, the senator over there, is sitting down with Democrats every day working on this. And if he and Kent Conrad on the Democratic side can continue to drive this, I think there's a real chance of getting something out of the Senate that we can then, bridge the differences.
Well, I hope so. It just seems that the fight was so vicious and you were such loggerheads over $38 billion. When you get talking about numbers of hundreds of billions or trillions, how are you going to fix that if you couldn't fix $38 billion easily?
I think the difference is that it is so clear to these members who have talked to the Federal Reserve and to economists. It's so clear to these senators that if they don't do this, they're only a year or two away from a bond crisis, that it's finally got their attention, that's going to be in their lap if they don't make these corrections now. That's my hope. And then second, of course, we have the public increasingly talking about this, and perhaps this is the only upside of having this thing on out in the media every day, is that people are becoming aware of the fact that we've got a $1.6 trillion deficit this year, and unless we adjust, it's going to be that way, and we're just going to keep arithmetically increasing this amount of the debt until the whole thing falls like a stack of cards. And I think that that's driving it.
Yeah, we've got the public has gone through in the last decade the market bubble, the stock market crash, so clearly it's rebounded almost pretty close to where it was. The housing bubble, the economy, job situation where it is. If the bond market crash happens in a year or two, at some point, enough's enough. I mean, we've got $14.29 trillion. We want to raise the debt limit above that. At some point, I hope people come to their senses and realize this is a crisis. And when crises happen, you absolutely have to face those hard decisions and make those hard choices that you've been sticking your head in the sand the last 20 years and didn't want to face. It's time we got to face it and tighten our belts.
Yeah, and you have to face it before you hit the crisis in this case. Because if you hit the crisis, then the interest rates shoot up, not just on treasuries, but on everything else. At that point in time that you have a bond crisis, the carrying cost of your debt all of a sudden, you know, goes up by 40%. And at that, you can't get out of that spiral. That's the danger. So that is why we've got to drive this argument home right now and have enough pressure applied. There's this old expression, when they feel the heat, they see the light. Regardless of political party, everybody in Washington right now, from the president on down, needs to feel the heat on this issue of the long-term unsustainability of this course, so that they all feel compelled to make the kinds of compromises they don't want to make but have to make in order to turn this around.
Congressman Royce, what do you think about the military spending budget? Clearly we have wars we're still in, we're trying to wind down and get out of. Do you feel we could slash that military budget in half and still be fine once we get out of there?
I think we'll have the troops out of Iraq by December. I think that as we go forward, what we've got to recognize is that we don't have 42% of the world's economy anymore like we did after the Second World War. We're, 25%? We'll eventually be down to 20. So we have got to figure out a way to reduce that presence. And I'm afraid that means that we're going to have to slowly draw down the troop strength in Asia, draw down the troop strength in Europe, and let our allies know that they're going to have to handle the carrying costs on that. The personnel costs, and then afterwards, you know, as people retire out of the military, we're at a position where we cannot afford long-term to continue on a path with as large an expenditure as we have. But I think there's a bright way to get there. You know, Britain, for several hundred years, put so much money into R&D that they made sure they always had the best ships. You know, they always had the best equipment, the best ships on the line. So they were heavily invested in technology with a gradually dwindling standing army. You know, over a period of 200 years, they were able to keep that advantage, even though their economy was not as large as ours. I think that we've got to be practical in this and find ways to bring those costs down. So I do think that bringing the troops back from Europe and back from Asia and doing a drawdown is eventually what we're going to have to do.
I'm going to exclude the military from the next statement. And by the way, they should make more money than the troops. But what about doing away with government pensions entirely? Because the pensions themselves, with the number of federal employees we have, that's money that we do not have to pay.
We should either have a situation where people fund the pensions themselves or, you know, move to a 401k position. I think if you move in that direction, you're never going to get rid of it entirely. But if you move in a direction towards a more sustainable situation that is more comparable to what people have in the private sector, then you also reduce that unfunded liability, not just off the, you know, backs of the taxpayers, but also certainly in the state of California, you've got to have.
Oh, it's huge.
You can't have people retiring at 50. I mean, at least young guys coming into and young women coming into to work today in a government job. Why can't you ask them? You've got so many people applying for every job. Why couldn't you ask them to change this so that instead of retiring at 50 or 55, this goes up? Because right now you're going to pay people, if they retire at 50, they're going to be living another 30 years. You're going to pay them as much for the last 30 years as you did for the first.
Yeah, they can make a couple million dollars. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Congressman Royce, we have to do this again. We're just out of time. And thank you for going overtime with this one. Will you come back again?
I certainly will, Frost. Right. Thank you.
We'll talk again. Thank you, Ed. All the best. Republican Congressman Ed Royce from the 40th district here in the state. Frost Stillwell, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Check the news with Rob Archer.